Welcome to the History of the Cold War podcast, movie episode 13, Devotion. As always, I'm your host, Jeff Hoag, and I'm joined by our producer, David Force.
Hello, folks.
If you enjoyed these episodes and learning about the Cold War, please consider supporting the podcast through our website at www.historyofthecoldwarpodcast.com, one word, or check us out on Patreon at www.patreon.com/coldwarpodcast. Tired of hearing me e-beg for money? Become a Patreon listener to get access to the commercial-free episodes. As always, this episode includes spoilers, so check out the movie before you listen to our commentary about it.
Jeff, thank you for the warning. The movie that we're covering is Devotion, made in 2022. It stars Jonathan Majors and Glenn Powell and is directed by J.D. Dillard. First off, could you kick us off and tell us, why did you choose to examine this movie?
So I selected this movie to review because it's a basically it's a very contemporary movie. It came out this year. They examined a lot of the themes and issues that we have looked at in the podcast so far. Namely, obviously, the general subject, the first theme, which is with the Cold War, which is a theme in the movie, the Korean War, which we obviously spent a few episodes on. And then specifically as well, when we talked about the Korean War in the podcast, we looked at the war at sea, and we also examined the air war in Korea in depth. And then, of course, it also looks at or issues around the civil rights movement and racism at the time, which, of course, we examined in more than a few episodes as well in the podcast. So given that the movie just came out, it was about all those different things that we've talked about in the podcast so far, I thought it made a lot of sense that we review this movie. I also thought it made a lot of sense to examine this film, especially as there's a few contemporary American films that there's very few, I should say, contemporary American films that actually examine America's involvement in the Korean War versus the Second World War. And as well, I thought that this movie had, or it looked like it did in watching it, but I'm not sure. And after doing the research, I'm not sure how many connections it actually had. But I did feel that there were a lot of influences from another movie that we examined about the Korean War, The Bridges at Tokyo Ri, which we examined back in, I think it was a few
episode seven.
Episode seven for movie reviews, if you want to check that out, in regards to the Korean War. So, you know, again, The Bridges at Tokyo Ri was, you know, they were taking off from an aircraft carrier and they were attacking bridges against North Korea. So I had a lot of similar elements I felt in that movie to this movie. And that movie, of course, was made closer to the actual events of the Korean War. This movie that obviously just came out is much further removed, but I thought it was a good movie as well. So just from a high level, I did want to say, just to start off, when we look at this movie Devotion, just some background for other listeners who might not have seen the movie yet, but they want to listen to what we had to say before they decided to go see it. Devotion is a movie which chronicles the experience basically of two naval aviators during the early Cold War and the Korean War. The story also examines basically, as I outlined earlier, the civil rights movement through the relationship of these two pilots, which is based on a true story. The movie stars Jonathan Majors as basically the black naval aviator, Jesse Brown, and Glenn Powell, who plays Tom Hubner. The movie is directed by, as Force said, J.D. Dillard, and it's based off of a book called A Devotion, An Epic Story of Heroism, Friendship, and Sacrifice by Adam Makos. And an interesting point I should mention as well, and doing some research about this movie, Dillard's father, who is the director, was actually the second African-American pilot on the Blue Angels. And he actually grew up as what they call it, a Navy brat. I'm not being mean to him. That's just what they call him. They're basically, those are children of people who are in the Navy. I think specifically officers. So he grew up in the Navy environment. Obviously, his dad was a naval aviator, just like the character, Jesse Brown. And he was, you know, African-American as well. So he said, when I read a little bit of research about it, he said that he knew that world very well. So he knew a lot of the themes. He brought his father in as someone to advise on the film as well, to try to get his father's perspective on different things and to bring his experience to creating the movie, which is, you know, his father obviously had all the elements that were very similar to Jesse Brown. So I thought that was an interesting insight into that. The movie as well, unfortunately, too, just as another insight, so far, even though it came out this past November, it's performed poorly so far, unfortunately, with only $21 million in ticket sales versus the $90 million budget it had for the creation of the movie.
Oh, wow. Okay. Why do you think it performed so poorly?
I think we could talk about that more at the end. I have some thoughts on that, but you know, I think off the top of my head, I think there were a couple of reasons why the movie performs poorly. I think one was that this movie was kind of slow in terms of the pacing of the movie. And then I think the other thing is that the movie, I think the biggest thing against, I actually like the movie and seeing it, but I think the biggest thing against this movie is that it was made during the wrong time. A lot of times a movie success or a story success, I think in some part also has to do with what's happening at the time. And I think, you know, can an audience connect with that movie? And I think if this movie was made 15, 20 years ago, I think it would have been more successful. But I think this movie today was less successful because I think it's just not as popular as a theme as it used to be. Because if you look at back in the day, you had movies like Red Tails, or you had movies like The Tuskegee Airmen that was made by HBO. And those types of movies were very successful because there was kind of like a lot of movies at that time were coming out that were kind of examining those types of subjects around race and overcoming racism. And I think that this movie is a little bit different than that. But I think because coming into the movie, a lot of people think it's about that. So they're already like, well, I already know that story, I'm going to skip it. So I think that's a thing against it. And also, I think right now the hot thing is superhero movies. And that's not a criticism. I know people love superhero movies. It's not a criticism. So, you know, calm down. I hear the keyboard going already. But I just think that, you know, just like Westerns were really popular for a time, or, you know, sword and sandal movies, I just think it's superheroes are really popular right now, those types of movies. And this is like way outside of that.
Well, Jeff, so, to be fair, Paramount did release also an aviation movie, a flying fighting movie a quarter earlier, and that did fantastically well. Top Gun Maverick made $1.5 billion, and it's still going.
That is true.
And that was that movie was, let's face it, a lot of fun. And it had, and it also had the star from Devotion was in there, played Hangman, and I thought, you know, did a very good job in both movies.
He did, but I will say that's an interesting juxtaposition. I didn't think too much on that when I watched. I thought of a little bit about it, but I didn't think a lot in terms of success versus not success. But I would say a couple things that Top Gun had going for it that I think this movie didn't. I think one is, of course, star power. I'd say there's three things. One is star power. The biggest thing is that you had Tom Cruise. Obviously, Tom Cruise is a huge name. Everyone knows him. So I think there's that. I think the other thing is just the nostalgia. So I had read that in terms of the people who are seeing Top Gun are mostly people who are, in terms of the audience, are going to the movie theaters or seeing it, are millennials and are Gen Xers, right? And of course, baby boomers as well. Because when the first Top Gun came out, those people were children or teens or adults at that time. So there's a connection to that movie and that time. And that movie and that time, that movie is very much wrapped up in the 1980s and Ronald Reagan. A lot of people, I think, today have very favorable views on that time for a myriad of different reasons. I think most people look back on the 1980s nostalgically, especially people now in, like I said, especially in the Gen X millennials group. So especially Gen X, because that was their youth. So I think that it had, the movie had that going for it, which this movie of Devotion, of course, didn't. And then I also think that just in a general sense, the pacing was a lot better. There's a lot more action and suspense. Not that there wasn't in Devotion, but there's just more of it in Top Gun, Maverick, than there was in this movie. As I think they were obviously movies that were trying to address two different subjects.
Yeah. Right? Although I will say the action in Devotion is quite good. But we will save that for later. We will touch on that a little bit later. Okay, so going then, was there anything like from a historical perspective that you found really interesting about the movie?
Yeah, so one of the things I think that was interesting about the movie, they didn't really focus on it too much, was that, so Jesse Brown was the first African-American naval aviator, which I didn't understand in the movie until afterwards, until I did research on it, right? I knew that, you know, obviously I believe that he had faced a lot of opposition in becoming a naval aviator and going through that process, but I didn't realize that he was the first, right? Which is important, which I don't think they really outlined enough in the movie. I think the other thing is that the Navy, in contrast to the Army Air Corps at the time, and the, well, before that, and then the Air Force, desegregated a lot quicker than the Navy, which was slower to desegregate, because, again, we talked about, you know, the Red Tail squadrons and Tuskegee Airmen, you know, coming out of the Army Air Corps during World War II. They had been obviously very successful, and that had all happened back during World War II, and the Navy, of course, didn't get a black naval aviator until after World War II, until the late 1940s, right? So again, just illustrating how much longer it took for the Navy to desegregate versus the Army, and then open up positions like being a naval aviator, a pilot. And eventually, you know, as well, which they don't dive too much into, which again, I don't think it was necessarily the main focus of the movie, but, you know, Jesse obviously went through a lot of suffering and personal persecution eventually to become a pilot. And obviously we see at the end of the movie, he's obviously killed in the war. And, you know, the one question that I had about this movie is that, and I didn't read the book, I think maybe, and then that's a dig on me. I should have taken, I guess, maybe the time to read the book or look at the book before I did this. But I do wonder, there's a couple of things I wonder in terms of his historical accuracy. Because when I look at the movie, I wonder, most of it from a high level seems accurate. But I do wonder, did they really meet Elizabeth Taylor? Or is that something Hollywood added in there? Or, you know, how can we verify that? That's one interesting. The other thing is him talking to himself in the mirror and beating himself up. I wonder if that was actually true or not as well. So that was another interesting thing, because the movie, like I said, is based off of a book. I looked at the author who wrote the book, Adam Makos, and it looks like Adam and this isn't in any way a criticism of him, but what it looks like what he does in terms of examining his website is, and he's been doing this for a long time, he's roughly about my age, so very old. And
Jeff just recently turned 40, listeners.
Yeah. And he started doing this when he was 15. I guess he made contacts with veterans who had been in the Korean War or in World War II. And he basically took down their stories, and then he turned their stories into books. And then this is the first of his books, which actually got turned into a movie. So I don't know, you know, in terms of, because the thing is, it looks like the most of his research is based on, again, these are assumptions. I haven't looked at his work, so this is with a grain of salt. This is not a criticism. It's just an observation off the limited information I have. It looks like he is basically taking stories or what people told him, but as a academically trained historian, I know that sometimes people's memories or recollections, especially this long after the event, can sometimes be swayed. So sometimes things that didn't happen or didn't happen exactly the way that they happened, you know, could be messing with the story a little bit. And I don't know how much of the story is 100, how accurate to real life is the story. So I do wonder about that. But for the most part, from everything that I seen, other than the Elizabeth Taylor thing, I think everything seems plausible. Even the Elizabeth Taylor thing is plausible. So at one point in the movie, he meets Elizabeth Taylor on the beach in Cannes. It could have happened, but I'd have to look back to see if Elizabeth Taylor was in France in Cannes at that time in 1950. So I would have to go and do research around that to either prove it or disprove it. But I didn't think it was obviously worth my time to look that far into that. But it is an interesting point. It didn't seem too outside the normal, that it didn't seem like it was implausible. But it was something that but that's only a very minor point.
What are some of the techniques a historian might use to be able to verify those types of stories? Like what are some of the things that you would look for in terms of sources, primary sources, to be able to then create a story?
About a person's life, or checking about the Elizabeth Taylor thing?
For checking about a person's life and how accurate the story was.
Yeah. So with that, if you're checking this movie, what you'd want to try to do is you want to try to look at, normally you'd look at, if they were a really famous person, like Elizabeth Taylor herself, right? You could go and find biographies about Elizabeth Taylor, right? And then you'd go to you'd look at who wrote the biographies, see what their credentials were. The more academic, the better. Then you want to check out their bibliographies. Their bibliographies should list any types of primary sources or anything else that they use. From there, you try to look at those sources to try to figure out those primary sources to figure out where this person was, when. For a person who is less well known, such as Jesse himself, you'd have to go through newspaper clippings. You'd have to go try to see if you can find any archival information on this person. You'd have to go request government documents, his service record from the U.S. Navy, see if you can get your hands on that, and any other documents basically related to him, to see what information you could glean from that, would be a starting point to do research to like that. People who obviously are less well known. I mean, he was known for his accomplishment, but obviously he wasn't like a politician or things like that. So it would be harder to find information on him, but it could be done. It would just take longer than a person that was more influential or more famous, so on and so forth.
Okay, moving on to the story. And Jeff, if you could give us kind of the brief outline of how the movie unfolded, and talk a little bit about the plot and some of the turns that happened in there.
Sure. So I'm going to go give basically a rough outline of the story. We used to go, obviously, for those who remember, we used to go scene by scene for these movie reviews, but we decided to drop that because it's too hard. But basically, the outline of the story is that the story basically opens with Tom Hubner. He's being transferred to the squadron from the Naval Academy, and then at this new squadron, he becomes Jesse's wingman. I think they're in South Carolina, if I remember correctly. And then Hubner and Jesse, they cautiously and awkwardly learn to become friends as they, in my opinion, basically they're navigating their relationship through the complications of a post-segregated military and the complicated race relations of that time. You know, so then as the Cold War heats up, the squadron switches. So in the beginning of the movie, they're flying Bearcats, which is a type of piston or propeller plane. And then they switch to another type of piston or propeller plane, which is called a Corsair, which became famous in World War II. And it continued throughout into the 1950s and especially in the Korean War. Now, this plane was much more powerful and thus dangerous to fly than the Bearcats. And Jesse wasn't.
How much more are we talking about here? Is this 100 horsepower more? What kind of?
I don't remember the exact amount they said in the movie, but it looked like it was a significant amount more, which is what scared Jesse. Especially the other thing is the nose of the aircraft was longer, so it made it harder to land the aircraft. You had to depend much more so on your instruments and what they were telling you than what you could do from line of sight. And Jesse was very good in terms of line of sight, and this caused him a lot of problems. And because of this, Jesse and Hubner had a few conversations around basically trust and, you know, following what you learned and so on and so forth. Eventually, even though it was kind of, he had made some mistakes, Jesse did eventually learn how to land and qualify with a new aircraft, and he was successful. Then after that, they explain in the movie that the Cold War is heating up. So they go ahead and they deploy the carrier and they're sent to the Mediterranean, which we talked about in the podcast. At the time in 1950, there was a lot of communist movements in the Mediterranean. There was, you know, the Greek Civil War, there was the very strong communist parties in Italy and in Greece. Yugoslavia had gone communist. Now, granted, there had been a break between Tito and Stalin, but the region still had gone communist. Albania had gone communist. So there were a lot of fears in the United States that more countries that were on the Mediterranean would go communist. So the United States, one of the things that they did, I should also mention that, you know, Russia was also pressuring Turkey for access through the Dardanelles and land and everything else. So the United States was supporting Turkey as well in the Mediterranean. So what the United States started doing was the United States started to deploy our carrier battle groups into the Mediterranean once again to show the flag in these European ports so that to demonstrate that the United States was there and that we were supporting our allies in the region. So you can see in the movie, the Jesse and Hubner's carrier is there basically showing the flag. And then at one point, they visit the port of Cannes in France, which is basically in the southern Mediterranean, or the French Mediterranean, I should say. And they're there. Jesse is like walking on the beach and he happens to meet Elizabeth Taylor, who then invites him to come to the casino later that evening to have some drinks with her. So then, you know, he basically tells Hubner and the rest of his co-pilot or his peers that like, hey, I got invited to go have drinks with Elizabeth Taylor. Why don't you guys come? They sort of half disbelieve him, but they go with him anyways. So while they're there and they're trying to get into the hotel, Jesse, who is, you know, Tom Hubner, who has become a friend of Jesse's, is disturbed by some of, because this is all new to him, he's disturbed by some of the racism that Jesse has to deal with. First, he is not able to get into the hotel. The French at first don't want him to come in. Eventually, he speaks to them in French. They're surprised. They change their minds. He also explains to them he's seeing Elizabeth Taylor and that she knows him, which she verifies. So then he gets in. And then at one point as well, later when he tries to get a drink at the bar, basically the bartender refuses to serve him, which also is something that disturbs Hubner again. But then, you know, they talk more, they build more of their friendship while they're there in France. And then they return to the carrier. So after they get back to the carrier, they hear that, of course, North Korea has invaded South Korea, and their ship makes its way, their carrier makes its way through the Suez Canal out to Korea, of course, to support the U.S. or U.N. efforts there, right? And of course, by the time they arrive on the scene, the Chinese have already come into the war. So their first mission that they get is they have to fly a mission, basically very similar to Tokyo, the bridges at Tokyo Re. They have to take out bridges along the Yalu River. And they go and do this. And at one point, Jesse sort of disobeys orders. He doesn't directly disobey it, but he doesn't follow it as he should. And he actually goes off. He takes out the bridge by himself. And then basically not thinking or not realizing the racist ramifications of the society that they're in. Hubner writes at this in his report, in his after action report. And basically Jesse's like, well, you don't understand what you just did to me. Because of people who want to see me fail, they're going to use this minor thing in the report as an excuse for them to take away my wings, and I won't be able to fly anymore. So they have an argument about that. You know, Hubner really apologizes. He doesn't, because again, he didn't quite understand that this was what the result of him putting that in their report was going to be. He even tried to talk to the Admiral out of it. But before this issue can really be resolved, the squadron is scrambled because basically the Marines around the Chosen Reservoir, which is a very famous battle, they desperately need air support. So basically at that point, the U.S. is sending any pilots we have. So they fly out, they start providing, you know, support to the Marines that are there and, you know, basically pushing back the Chinese through rocket and basically strafing attacks. And then, unfortunately, Jesse's plane gets struck and he has to crash. So he crash lands in a clearing, but he doesn't get out of his plane. So Hubner, again, who's his wingman, starts circling to figure out what's going on. It looks like he's trapped. Hubner crashes his aircraft. He then gets out of his aircraft, but he can't get Jesse out of his because in the crash, he basically got caught. So basically it crumpled down. He wasn't able to get loose. And eventually he dies there. And then even though they're able to get a helicopter back out there to save Hubner, Jesse unfortunately dies. And then they, you know, fast forward a little bit to the end of the movie. Hubner is eventually awarded the Medal of Honor, but he's very sad about it. He talks to Jesse's widow, and basically then he builds a lifelong relationship and friendship with their family, you know, Jesse's widow and the daughter. And over the years, they explain that both families become really close because of this friendship, because of this event. And that's more or less the outline of the movie.
Who did you think were the real heroes and villains in this movie?
So I think the easy thing is obviously the heroes in this movie are Hubner and Jesse, you know, trying to work together, you know, on this relationship and trying to build this relationship together despite the circumstances of their time. I think the villains in this movie is basically the challenge of overcoming the racism of the period and like working through that. And then obviously the communists and the Chinese, the communist Chinese on another level are the enemy that they specifically are engaging in combat.
Thank you for listening to Movie Review 13, Devotion. If you wanted to listen to the extended version, please join us on patreon.com/coldwarpodcast to become a Patreon subscriber. If you did have any questions or comments or any suggestions for future movie review films, please join us on our website at www.historyofthecoldwarpodcast.com. And while there, please fill out our survey so that you can help us to bring you a better show.